DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I'm delighted to be joined by Deacon James Keating, who is the Director of Theological Formation for the Institute for Priestly Formation, located at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska. Deacon Keating has served at the Pontifical College Josephium in Columbus, Ohio. He has led more than 400 workshops on moral theology and spirituality nationwide. He has authored or edited more than 11 books, including The Way of Mystery, The Eucharist and Moral Living, Pure Heart, Clear Conscience, Catholic Moral Life, and Listening for Truth. With Deacon James Keating, we go inside the pages of Spousal Prayer, A Way to Marital Happiness, published by IPF Publications. Welcome, Deacon Keating.
Thank you.
There's a paradigm in the book that I just love. It talks about marital intimacy. Often, Deacon Keating, when we think of marital intimacy, we think of a sexual intimacy, the bodily intimacy. But what you talk about here is that intimacy, yes, of the body with our spouse, but also with the heart.
The fear of self-revelation is so great that in the United States today, and perhaps in the Western world, we reveal our bodies before we reveal our hearts. So the rampant rise of fornication before marriage, cohabitation before marriage, they haven't even given themselves a chance to truly trust one another with their hearts, and they're already trying to symbolize in the beautiful act of the nuptial embrace, they're already trying to symbolize a full union. Well, there is no full union because there's been no self-revelation. There's been no entrusting of the heart through the sharing of thoughts, feelings, and desires. The unclothed body is a symbol that the heart has been exhausted, and then the body follows. In the United States, we start with the body, and we may never get to the heart. And of course, this is why we have such a high divorce rate. Nobody is having the patience enough to suffer the presence of another person in their life. This person is not you. This person is different. And this person needs to feel secure. This person needs to feel known and loved. And that means we have to create an environment where we trust one another so deeply that thoughts and feelings, desires and dreams are shared at a very deep level in faith, in prayer. And then finally, on the honeymoon night, the sharing of the body will make sense. What we're doing now is sort of a ludicrous a dance where what's happening is the music hasn't even started and we're all dancing. The music is the sharing of each other's hearts. And we run off to honeymoons like we're running off to vacations now, because the act of sexual intimacy has occurred long before, and there has been little or no sharing of hearts. And therefore, basically, what happens after a marriage is a vacation. And if we're ever going to reestablish the dignity of man and woman and reestablish the dignity of marriage, we have to first understand that we need the courage to create environments where true intimacy is happening during the engagements and the dating period. And this true intimacy is a sharing of hearts, not bodies.
In your book, Spousal Prayer, it speaks of the opportunity before marriage to prepare yourself to enter into this kind of marital intimacy. But this book is also for the couple who's been married for over 20 years, isn't it? Or at any stage in their marriage.
Yes, any stage in marriage. Those of us who are looking to perhaps either deepen our love for one another and our love for the Trinity from the very beginning of marriage or into your 50th anniversary. Because we're dealing with persons, there's really no bottom, no end to how much we can know about one another, be it God or our spouses. So our intimacy can deepen continually over the years, over the decades. And this intimacy, when it's connected with God, is even more fascinating, because God is the source of all newness and all new creation. And so a lot of times spouses may get cynical about one another. I know exactly what Bob's going to do or what Harriet's going to do. Well, that may be true because Bob and Harriet are simply stuck in the rut of being Americans. But once you add the Trinity, once you have deepest prayer with God, Bob and Harriet are going to become much more fascinating, not only to you as their spouse, but to themselves, because God is the source of all newness. And so our journey into one another, into God, into our spouse, is really endless because God is eternal. So when we have communion with God as spouses, we are also opening up all sorts of new possibilities for our own marriages.
One of the first steps that you speak of in the book is that you need to behold your spouse. And you say, quite frankly, in the book, that it does not mean that you stare at him or her with your eyes fixed upon his or her face. It's something much deeper than that, isn't it?
Yes, to behold your spouse is the key to remembering your spouse. And a lot of marriages grow stale or tired because we do not remember the first gift that the spouse was to us, and therefore the ongoing gift that the spouse is to us. We forget. We forget how much we were in love. We forget what we have sacrificed to be able to be together in love because of the deadening routine of time. And so we almost have to commit ourselves to beholding our spouse again in all their worth and in all their beauty. And of course, in the United States, beauty means visual beauty for the body. And of course, this is a wonderful thing, but we also know that beauty fades according to cultural standards. The cultural standard of American beauty is probably a young person in their 20s. And therefore, everyone's always measuring themselves against this cultural standard. But the standard for beauty in Catholicism is holiness and moral character. And mature people who love one another realize that what they're loving and what they're seeing in their beloved is the most lasting element of their person. That element which will be with Christ in heaven, their moral constitution, their sanctity, the beauty of them, of their soul, of their personality. To see that again, to see the beauty of their moral dignity, fall in love with what's good, not what's passing. And this is what we mean by beholding your spouse. What was the goodness that attracted you to him or her in the beginning? And what has come in over the succeeding years to take that awareness out of your mind that you originally had? How did you become so unfree, so to speak, and no longer able to see what really riveted your attention about the beauty of the person you married? So beholding your spouse at the very depths of their being, remembering again why you're grateful for their person, is one of the key ways to reignite and to sustain love in a marriage.
Is it harder for men to do than for women?
Well, I mean, the mutual battles are that women continually feel inadequate because of these high physical standards of beauty. And men are tutored then to look for a perfection that doesn't exist. And so at least in the world of beauty, the spouses sometimes keep missing each other. The woman says she isn't good enough, and the man is tutored to think she isn't. And there's mutual dissatisfaction with one another's bodies. And if they have not cultivated a spiritual life, well, that's not even on the radar. And so it's not a matter of you're not holy enough for me or I'm not holy enough for you. In most American Catholic marriages, they're not really even thinking on that level, because the whole marriage has become so secularized. So I'm not sure that it's harder for either gender on the spiritual level, because the spiritual level so often is really non-existent. But on the physical level, there is a great struggle with beholding beauty. And this leads a lot of times to a despondency in both the male and the female. Where is this perfection that the secular world, through the media and through movies and through all of these surgeries that people are undergoing to try to stave off old age and death, where is perfection? And they either don't want to go where real perfection is, namely their relationship with God, or no one has told them that what they're really looking for is God. When the spouses criticize each other's personalities, bodies, they're really looking for rest in God. In couples that have a very deep spiritual life, there is a hospitality toward one another's bodies and a hospitality toward one another's personalities in a way that you don't see in a secularized couple. They're not really thinking about this race for perfection, because the spiritual couple is placing all their needs and desires for perfection in their prayer life, not in one another.
It is a different paradigm for many of us, but it's the Christian paradigm. And that would be exemplified even in that second vital component of listening to your spouse. Because the listening isn't ultimately done just with your ears, is it?
Listening is your whole being paying attention to the whole being of your spouse. Moods, movements, desires, unspoken needs, words that say one thing but you know they mean something else. So as you grow in spousal love, your whole person becomes an ear. Your whole person becomes faculty to listen through. And this is basically the ear of the heart. You're no longer just listening to words or sounds. You're actually trained by love to listen to a person, the whole person, by way of your whole person. And at the very depths of our understanding of the word listening is the word obedience. And obedience means to raptly attend to the one you love, to raptly listen to the one you love. Obedience doesn't have much to do with imposition of power. That's a politicized understanding of obedience. The spiritual understanding of obedience is centered around this wonderful skill and virtue of listening for the truth, listening for the truth of your vows, listening for the truth of your spouse's needs. And that's why obedience used to be in the wedding vows. It wasn't about one gender oppressing another or someone bossing someone else around. It was the deep desire upon the part of the spouses that I would never grow so alienated from you that your legitimate needs that I could fulfill remain unfulfilled, because I'm truly listening to you in the fullness of your person. And listening, of course, is a way to union. First, you behold. Then you draw the person into you by listening. And this is one of the ways that we become united to each other. And the union is an affective adhesion. We literally stick together by way of listening to one another. This is how we become one.
I don't know very many couples, even if they had the it's you and me against the world type of attitude going into their marriage, that ultimately at some point they end up hurting one or the other. Those types of hurts that come from someone you love so deeply can be very, very difficult to truly forgive. I mean, we may say we forgive you, but there's the memory and the lack of trust that will develop. Forgiveness being the third vital component is really key ultimately in our prayer life and with our relationship with our spouses.
There are a lot of people today who are very cynical about love. In fact, there are many people who would just listen to what I said about beholding your spouse and listening to your spouse and laugh at that. There's a great cynicism about love. Love is impossible. Love can't happen. Nobody loves at that level. This is ridiculously idealistic. And when people say that, what you can hear in them is grief. What I just described is not ridiculously idealistic. What I just described is a level of love that demands suffering. And what's lacking in marriages today is courage. The courage to love someone so deep that it causes you pain because your ego is dying. And the ego is being decimated because you will to behold and you will to listen out of love. But very few people have this courage or make a commitment to this courage. And yet the human heart still wants it. And this, of course, is the birth of cynicism. I want something. My nature wants something. I want to be loved in such a way and to give love in such a way. And yet, because of sin, because of human finitude and limit, I'm disappointed. They start grieving about love. And in that cynicism, that unrelated grief, they become people who think that love is impossible. The important thing here is that if you have been hurt in your marriage, or if you have been hurt in a relationship before marriage, what have you done with the grief of that relationship? If it's still rattling around in you, unrelated to the Trinity's love for you, you probably have developed a cynical heart, a fearful heart, a sarcastic heart, because that's what happens when pain is unrelated to God. It does not become healed. It becomes disfigured as cynicism and sarcasm and grief. So when the Catholic Church teaches the beauty of marital love, it realizes that it's up against quite a battle today, the battle against cynicism. And if those who have been hurt through human sin would take that grief and pour it into the Holy Mass, pour it into adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, that grief would be assuaged and consoled by God, and they would look toward a day where they could love again and take another chance and trust and open their hearts up again. Because that's what humans were created for. So yes, humans hurt each other, and forgiveness is essential in marriage. And without forgiveness, marriage cannot go on. But the bigger social problem today is that people don't even believe in love anymore, because so many people have been hurt, so many divorces, so many people have been in relationships of fornication before marriage that have broken apart. They have given themselves and have not been reverenced. And so the real crisis today is, do people even believe that love is possible? And God, of course, is always there saying, of course it's possible. It's the only reality that lasts.
Spousal Prayer, A Way to Marital Happiness, is a very practical book, Deacon Keating. I mean, not only do we, not only are we given the ideal, the goal of what a Christian marriage can be, but you've, in a very real way, give us the actions that can guide us into a deeper relationship with each other.
You may not believe it here as I'm speaking, because I speak abstractly sometimes or in a deep way, but it's a very tiny book. It's only, 60 pages. And it's very practical about how to pray, steps, how to relate to each other as a couple. The whole point of writing the book was to give couples hope that staying together and learning how to communicate with one another actually instills within the couple the same virtues that are necessary to stay with God and commit yourself to God. So to behold God also, to listen to God also, and not necessarily to forgive God, but to repent of any sins that we have committed against God. If we can enter into those three simple realities, beholding the beauty of the one we love, listening to the one we love, and forgiving or repenting, then that relationship is going to remain. It's going to stay, no matter what the culture does to the meaning of marriage, no matter what politics is doing to the meaning of marriage. Authentic marriage will be able to weather a cultural storm and personal sin if our prayer life goes deep enough and if we regularly receive our spouse at deeper and deeper levels of love, of care, of concern. And obviously this has to be somewhat simple because the sacrament of marriage is the normal way of being human. And so it's not for elites to do this. This life of being in love with one another has to be somewhat simple because it's the way that most human beings exist on the planet. And so God is not silly or stupid. God knows that love is possible. But there is that one hurdle. And the one hurdle that we all have to get over is the lack of trust. To really open and be vulnerable to both God and the spouse. And again, to be vulnerable to God takes the same skills and virtues as to be vulnerable with your spouse. If you are listening to your spouse, conversing, having a reciprocal relationship of hearts with your spouse, then you can do the same with God. And so I'm trying to encourage the couples to take the same skills that they have with each other and now apply it to prayer together. Or if one or the other couple is very skilled at prayer, but the relationship with the spouse is somewhat shallow, well then take those same skills and virtues that you have developed in listening and relating to God and then transfer them over to your relationship with your spouse. If you can pray, you can talk to your spouse. If you can talk to your spouse, you can pray.
It's a little book. But the beauty of it is that it doesn't dumb down the ideal. It actually, what you give us is something to help us accomplish it. And I think this is the kind of gift that I would love to see. You know, it would be perfect, Deacon Keating, if someone took this book and at a marriage that will be occurring in the months to come and not only gave it to the couple, but to everybody that came to the wedding. Because I think this is the kind of book that speaks to the human heart. Because if the couple can do this, imagine what they can do out in the world.
There's a flood of books, you know, so the self-help books, which, as you say, dumb things down. And to dumb things down is basically to sanitize them of their beauty and to get to some type of nuts and bolts summary. But what we tried to do in this book is to keep the beauty of our Catholic teachings at the center. Even though the so-called steps or content of being in love is made practical, you always want the practical connected to the beauty. Because when the practical is disconnected from the beauty, it just becomes useful. It becomes routine. And this is what dries up the human heart, dries up human spirit. In a Catholic marriage, the practical, doing the dishes, raising teenagers, having two jobs, paying the mortgage, the practical always is connected to the beautiful. The first beauty that the practical is connected to is the beauty of your own spouse, both spiritually, morally, and physically. But it's also then connected to the beauty of Jesus' self-gift on the cross, the bridegroom giving himself to the bride, the church. That love of Jesus for the church is actually what you are symbolizing as husband and wife. And so he is the source of all your energy, the source of all your inspiration. His love for the church is the source of all your strength to keep going on, to get through the practical within each day, and not lose hope and not become cynical, because the practical can wear us down. And so in a book like this, which is simply trying to remind the church of the simplicity and beauty of marriage, the beauty stays connected to the practical. Whereas in self-help books, it's just utilitarian, useful, dumbed-down information. And it's really sanitized in such a general way that it applies to everyone and therefore no one. And in this book, we tried to be deeply aware that we are talking to real people. Who are these people? The man and the woman who stood before a priest or a deacon and asked Jesus to take their love up into his love for the church. It's a very specific audience, and I hope this audience will be healed by reading the book.
I think instead of calling it a self-help book, it would be Help Each Other book.
Help Each Other book. And also, to Help Each Other book, it becomes only that because we realize we're receiving our help from God. So it's God's helping us. And that's all God exists for. We can ask a silly question, what does God do all day? All God does all day is think of you, to want to help you, reach his own happiness. He has come upon the earth in the flesh, given himself as the bridegroom upon the cross, for the church, his beloved the bride, for only one reason, so that that bride, me and you, can spend eternity sharing in his happiness. And our marital happiness is a pale prefigurement of the happiness we will have forever in Jesus.
Any final thoughts, Deacon Keating?
To wipe away in your hearts any cynical attitude toward love and toward marriage, any grief, any sadness, any disappointment that you have in your heart over not being loved or loving wrongly in your past or present, give all that grief over to Jesus. You will be healed, your heart will be resurrected, and you will see again that love is not something to dismiss in a cynical way, but love is something to wait for and to receive in a new way.
Thank you so much, Deacon Keating.
Thank you.
With Deacon James Keating, we've gone inside the pages of Spousal Prayer, A Way to Marital Happiness. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to ipfpublications.org, the website for its publisher, the Institute for Priestly Formation, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.